Hi guys.
Hello.
At least they didn't skimp on the headphones.
What are these for?
Oh, but I look so good with them on.
Would you write it down for me?
Egunon, muy buenos días. Vamos a dar comienzo a la rueda de prensa que va a ofrecer el equipo de la producción norteamericana As You Are, que, como saben, se proyecta dentro de la sección oficial del festival. Nos acompaña el director y guionista, co-guionista de la película, Miles Joris Perafit, junto con Madison Harrison, también autor del guión, los dos actores protagonistas, Owen Campbell y Charlie Heaton, el productor Brent Stiefel, junto con Joseph Mastantuono, que es también productor de la película, y finalmente también está con nosotros el director de fotografía, Caleb Heyman. Vamos a comenzar ya, cuando lo deseen, con la primera pregunta.
Hello, my name is Paul Katzenberger from Germany. I have a question to the director. I was wondering in to what extent this film is a criticism of society in America or the US, because many of the things you show, like availability of weapons, drug abuse, and also homophobia, are things pretty prevalent in American society. So to what extent is this a criticism of society?
Well, I think that there, you know, by nature of it being a film that takes place in America, and especially now with a lot of the news coming out of there, it definitely does stand to a certain degree as a criticism. I think also, though, what was more interesting than me, for me than just doing a criticism of American culture is also talking about, you know, the other side of that, which is that there is that's not representative of everybody, you know. Certainly, you know, talking about gun control and things like that is right now a really big issue in the States, and feels like when you're telling a story about this age range of teenagers, and when you're telling a story that takes place in the area that it takes place in, which is kind of this rural part of New York, it's sort of unavoidable to a certain degree to talk about it. That said, the film for me is not, it's not an issue film. It's not a decidedly LGBT film or decidedly not an LGBT film. It's not a film about gun control. It's a film about teenagers who really love each other, you know, and teenagers who are trying to figure out what that love means when they're in this kind of world that does have all of those elements that you're talking about, but also has like really true love as well.
Hola, buenos días. Yo quería preguntar sobre la ambientación de la película. Bueno, está ambientada en los años en los que está ambientada, y quería saber si cree que hoy en día se podría hacer esta película, o sea, ambientada hoy en día, en la actualidad, y no en aquellos años. Pues, no sé, y otra cosa que me llama la atención es por qué ha elegido esa época. Bueno, es un hecho que marcó bastante una generación, pero ¿por qué? Porque me llama bastante la juventud de todos los implicados. Gracias.
Yeah, I think that it was a choice. We made a very, the choice was pretty clear to us at a certain point when Madison and I were writing. And actually, Madison and I made a short film first when I was in college that it was based on, and that took place in the 90s as well. And Madison actually played the lead character in that short film, which he did brilliantly. But for us, setting it in that time, you know, when you're, at least for me, when you start making a film, you look at everything, whether it's, you know, the music or the actors or the set dressing or whatever it is, they're all your tools to tell your story. Those issues that these kids are going through and also that these parents are going through in the film are not new problems, and they're not problems that have gone away at all. You know, it's very universal. People are still dealing with exactly this kind of thing in adolescence, in adulthood, and always have been, and always will be to a certain degree. But what setting it in the 90s gave us was a means of looking at that that was different. If we were to tell this story now, the sort of coping mechanisms for that has really changed with the internet, which has been amazing. But also, I don't think inherently changes the solitude of it. I don't think that inherently changes the feeling of loneliness and the fear of it. What it does change is the way that we process that and how we communicate that. For me, I wanted to make a movie about these two kids who find each other and find that they're the only people that they can relate to, and so that they're coping with these feelings and they're dealing with this is in their relationship together, as opposed to on a message board online, or as opposed to on their Instagram, or as opposed to things like that. So really what it did was it allowed us to put the story in this kind of pressure cooker where there was no out. You know, there was nowhere to deflect the attention. There was nowhere to sort of soften the blow of the reality. Also, you know, in the 90s in the U.S., you're sort of coming out of Reagan, and you're coming out of this, like, reestablishment of family values, and you're coming out of sort of this reestablishment of, like, gender norms and gender roles. And that's something that the parents in the film are struggling with just as much as the kids, I think. You have this character of Tom, the stepdad, whose masculinity for him is about strength and this kind of, like, militaristic view of the world and of what being a man is, you know. And you have Karen, the mother, who's this incredibly loving person, but whose identity is also wrapped up in this idea of the man, you know, of how she identifies with this person that she's with. And these are kind of the forces that these kids are like, wait, but this is bullshit. Like, this isn't real. This isn't what how we identify or how we see ourselves. So that also just gave us a sort of larger cultural framework to put it in, to sort of heighten the stakes of that, and be able to say a lot of that stuff without having to explicitly say, like, well, in this world, there's, like, gender norms and there's, like, things like that. Yeah.
Hi there. For a director as well, I would like to know, the ending, do you choose not to show us? Sorry? You can't hear me?
I hear you.
Yeah. You do, but your voice. I guess the rest of the people can't.
I don't know.
Vale, hay otro micro? Hay otro micro? Porque el intérprete no me oye.
No sé por qué.
¿Me oyes ahora? ¿Sí?
Okay.
Vale, hola.
Sorry, there's a problem with the mic.
Yes. So, yeah, I'd like to know, do you choose to not specifically show what happens at the end to let us think in, to leave us thinking, I don't really know what happened there, or for you the end is really closed, but it was just a visual decision?
It's interesting because, you know, a lot of the film is about, like, fluidity and ambiguity and sort of the ambiguous nature of the way that all of these people feel about each other, and is sort of about the impulse that the rest of the culture feels to delineate that and to say that this is this or this is that, you know. For these characters, they're feeling these things and they don't really know where it goes, and they don't really know where they place that or how they identify specifically in those sort of terms. For me, the idea of leaving the ending a little bit open was because I didn't want to make it a story of morality. I didn't want to make it moral at the end of the day. And I think that if it was very clear, you know, if there was all of this sort of ambiguity and fluidity in their love and in their feelings and in their experience, and then all of a sudden at the end it was like, but this happens at the end, then all of a sudden all of that sort of ambiguity and all of that sort of like fluidity that these characters are field is defined by this action, by this thing, and then it becomes a moral story. And for me, that's the least interesting part of it. What's a lot more interesting is watching these characters navigate this thing and watching these characters fall in love. And you as the audience trying to figure out what that love is at the same time that they're trying to figure out what that love is. And what happens, you know, what the actual fact is really secondary in a way to that feeling that they have and that feeling that I want the audience to have, that we all want the audience to have. So yeah, for me it was about like allowing the film to exist in a space where you could walk out of it thinking 100 different things, but the one thing that you knew is these people really loved each other, you know? Yeah, so I hope that answers your question.
Siguiente pregunta, por favor.
Hola. Quería preguntar a los actores. Me gustaría saber si para preparar sus personajes cogieron algún tipo de modelo, lo crearon desde cero. ¿Cómo plantearon un poco la relación entre ellos? Bueno, un poco cómo fue esa preparación.
Well, the first thing we did, Charlie and I, we shared it. We all lived in a house together, and Charlie and I shared a door. Our rooms connected, and we did a lot of late night talking about the characters or improvisations. And I didn't really build a character independently of Charlie, or I tried not to at least. And through these, we both got to the set about a week early, and through that door, we sort of, or I'd like to think we built two characters together that are sort of, our work in building the characters were, in, I don't know, yeah, like that.
Yeah, I guess the main part, you know, is one of the things that, you know, makes it work and makes the whole story work is the relationships, you know, in the characters, and they're so vital that everything that's going on in their world, I mean, it really stems down to the main part is, you know, is their relationships and their love for each other. So, you know, when getting onto this movie, I guess, I first met Owen in New York and we totally met each other and we're very two different people. And obviously, but very two different people in our approach to I guess how we kind of act and how we do our method. And but then when we kind of got to this house, like Owen was saying, yeah, we just spent time doing things together and building a relationship as Charlie and Owen, which obviously coincides with Mark and Jack. So we were out skating together, or we sat up and watched movies together, and we wore the clothes and because costume were downstairs, and we hung out and really just kind of naturally bonded and did everything together for the first 2 weeks. And then Amandla came on board and straight away she came into this relationship and it just worked. And we all felt, you know, very close and very trusted with each other. So when it came to the shooting, it felt very relaxed. There was no fear going into it. And we were a very small crew and a very small cast. And like, everyone's young, but we all became a family, and which is a big sense of the movie, is that there is this underlying current of finding each other and finding family and finding relationship and love, and that kind of happened in the movie. It was a very special kind of project in that sense, if that answers the question.
And Miles is really great at how did he put it? He said it so well a year ago, but it was a lot of it was about orchestrating the vibes, he said, which is real, you know. He did an amazing job at creating an environment that was not only a safe work environment, but after we would wrap for the day, we still were interested in investigating the story together.
Yeah.
You know, I remember I would stay up with Charlie, or I'd stay up with Amanda, or we'd all stay up together, or we'd stay up with the different crew members, or with Madison, and we just, you know, we were all together and wanted to keep investigating.
Yeah, it was constantly like everyone was talking about the movie while working on it. Every night we'd come home from a day's shoot and we'd all sit round and, you know, continue living in the world of the movie and the characters and all kind of discover. I felt like I discovered a lot about the movie, you know, as we were working, and I think that was a lot with everybody. We kind of discovered more and more as we went on shooting. Yeah. Thank you.
Hola de nuevo. Yo quería preguntar sobre la presencia de Mary Stuart Masterson, que claro, en aquellos años en los que está ambientada la película, pues bueno, era un poco referente también en el cine. Pues quería saber si es deliberado que ella esté, si es algún tipo de guiño a aquella época también. Y luego también, pues tengo la curiosidad, claro, la película se ambienta, los años que se ambienta, se titula As You Are, y creo que no sale ninguna canción de Nirvana en toda la película, creo. Entonces, ¿por qué? Gracias.
Nirvana was just, they were like a little bit too eager to let us use all their music, so we decided, we just thought, you know, they wanted it too bad, so it's kind of, go to the first question. Mary Stuart Masterson, first of all, you know, growing up watching her films, she's just like a force, you know, she's like, first of all, a brilliant actor, but also she has a sort of presence on screen that really, like, her vibe and her tone and kind of the timbre of who she is smelled so much when she's playing different people in this really beautiful way. I think definitely, you know, this was a really small movie. And, like, getting people to do a really small movie is not easy. And I think that she was incredibly brave to do this film because she hadn't been in a film in a little while, and it sort of like had the most beautiful family in the world and was, you know, raising this other life. It was definitely, you know, for us was really exciting, first of all as fans, but also it was like, well, yes, she was this sort of figure at the time the film was taking place, you know. So she fit into that world in this way. So, you know, we had a lot of conversations about how interesting it would be to take somebody like that, who was this figure at that time, and place them in this role, because I think a lot of what that character is going through is kind of mirrored in that. You know, this is like a woman, Karen is a woman who, like, in this small town when she was young, like, younger, Mary Stuart's still young, but when she was younger, she was like the like princess of this town, you know, she was the movie star in this town, and now she has a family, and now she's like dealing with these difficulties that being the movie star of a town doesn't get rid of. And that, I think, to all of us was like, she had this sort of personal investment because she understood that to a capacity that I think a lot of people wouldn't. So yeah, it was definitely intentional, and then it was luck that she said yes. Because it was the first film she'd done in a while, and I mean, none of these people had any reason to trust me or Madison or anyone, because we'd never done it before, and we were like 10 years old, but she did, and she gave everything, and her, you know, her and Scott Cohen, who plays Tom, they, you know, they were the actors who'd done the most, and John Skurdy, who were like these actors who had done the most, you know, been on the most movies out of anyone involved in the film at all. And they weren't weird about it, you know, they were like so committed to like doing this thing all together and being a part of our little weird creepy family that like lived in this house in the woods, that they just gave everything and were super open and were super incredible to work with. And we're kind of role models, I think, like for me, like watching their work ethic and watching the way that they operate on set, like I'd never really...
Yeah.
Obviously never done this kind of thing, but like I know Scott, it was like
Scott was amazing.
Yeah. You want to talk about Scott?
Scott, yeah, I mean Scott was great for me. He played my dad, but this guy who just came on and brought, obviously I'd not done too much, and what he kind of showed me was how much he could bring. He just brought this whole character, but how much he could bring that wasn't on the page, and he would come and he would do these amazing, like, his choices were so bold, and he would take it and take the character and live in the character, and it was, I felt like at the time like a big mentor to me. I was kind of, you know, a really good relationship, but he would 100% give to that character, and so much that he would do, and you'd just have to watch him and be like, this guy is genius. Yeah. And like I think the first time we were doing, there's the scene where Scott, you know, he slaps Mark after they've not cleaned up, and we were just doing the rehearsal. We're like, okay, we're just going to rehearse and action, and you know, he's like, hey Mark, get over here, and when he comes, and you know, he's like, I thought I told you to clean this up, and I'm like, yeah, I was just, and he just. And he just slapped me so hard, my ears were ringing, and I was like, wow, this guy's not messing around. He's like, you know, he was, and then afterwards, you know, it was fine.
And he's like, be a man.
Yeah, he taught me to be a man on this movie. Very great guy, great dad.
Yeah. Next question, please.
Are you done with the Nirvana bit?
A what?
The song bit?
Oh, the Nirvana thing. Oh, in seriousness. No, I mean, first of all, getting licensing Nirvana music is a nightmare. That's like a very, we didn't even, like, we considered that route for like a minute, 1 minute, 2 minutes maybe. But, you know, one rights to one of those songs is like 3 times our budget. So, we could have probably like used covers or something like that or gotten away with it, but to me, it sort of, I felt like that, what that would add to the film wasn't really worth it. Because the spirit of it for me is in there. And I mean, Nirvana is, you know, my favorite band of all time. And so like, yeah, it would have been a dream to be able to use Nirvana's music. But I also think that like, it would have actually taken a little bit away from the isolation that they're feeling, because it would have been an incredibly recognizable thing in the middle of this film that not really anything is very recognizable in it, besides, I guess, Mary Stuart Masterson. We couldn't get it, but no one was, like, devastated by not getting it.
Okay. Yeah.
Hello, over here.
It wasn't my question. I was just telling him to finish this.
Sorry? So. Okay. Do you want to put it? Okay.
Yeah. Can I? Yeah. Okay. Sorry about that.
Sorry.
No worries.
I just wanted to ask Charlie, how are you dealing with the Stranger Things craze?
it's crazy. It's so overwhelming. I don't think, you know, a lot of us, I mean, it's a Netflix show, but I don't think we didn't expect the response that the show has had, which is amazing to have such a response. But it's kind of mind-blowing, very overwhelming at the moment. Things are changing, you know, very fast. And I mean, not day-to-day. My day-to-day life is exactly the same, but just the response from people is changing. But all in a really positive way. And, you know, I think the show is, you know, is great. And they've done something, you know, very special. And, but yeah, again, it's just... just overwhelming, but exciting, I guess, at the same time, for everyone involved and the two directors, you know, who created. I mean, they were showrunners; they did everything pretty much. They've really done something really great.
We've all been geeking out about it because we were like furious with the fact that he was doing that show, because we wanted to like shave his head and put tattoos all, and they wouldn't let us. So we all wanted to hate that show so much when it came out. Like it was like, well, Charlie, like limited days, because you only shoot this Netflix thing. We were like, Netflix? Like, really, dude? Like, you're gonna do a Netflix thing instead of our like tiny movie where you won't get paid and you'll like live on a cot? And then it came out, and now we're all like, hey, what's up, Charlie? You like want to hang out anytime ever? Like I watched the first episode of that show trying to be like, yeah, I'm gonna see what this is all about, like what these chumps like stole him away for, and like 12 hours later I'm like in bed weeping like, like, he's my friend, dude.
Great.
Por favor.
Hello, congratulations for the movie, really. I think it's a very honest movie and with no artificial elements, that just the theme goes along. And my question was for the director, but if any of you want to complement the answer, it's what do you think about the evolution, or what is your future perspective of American, independent American cinema in the future?
Yeah, I probably am the least equipped person to ever answer that question, because we made this movie in a weird vacuum that, like, no one even in the indie world knew it was getting made. No one knew anything about it, you know. It's weird, and I think independent film is in a weird time, because, you know, 10 years ago it meant something very different than it does now. Now you have, like, $100 million movies that are still independent films, and that's, like, it's great that, like, independent financiers are like trying to do that, and that's amazing. I want to do that kind of indie, like, if you know. but no, I mean, you know, I think that there's some the best cinema in the States is operating in that world. I mean, I'm like, I'll be the first to admit, like, I love, like, Marvel movies get me going so crazy. I love going to, like, big spectacle movies, but, like, I was really lucky to study with, like, two of my favorite filmmakers in college, Kelly Reichardt and So Young Kim, and I think that those two women are making some of the best independent films around right now, and have been able to keep making their movies in their way, the way that they want to, with smaller budgets, but not giving in to the demands of anything, and really just making really powerful stories about people who generally don't get to have their stories told. So I think that it's, like, an incredible tool, and I hope that all that money that's coming into independent film will sort of get funneled to those people who have those really unique voices and really unique ways of telling stories. But I've only made one film, and no one knew about it until until all of a sudden, somehow,
terrific,
a few people did.
Terrific question in any case. Thank you very much.
Para una última pregunta, tenemos tiempo.
Excuse me, you were talking about to people who, your heroes in filmmaking. I felt a lot of Gus Van Sant in this. Elephant, the way it started, walking down the hall in the high school. And I was wondering how strong that is. Also, there were moments like This Boy's Life. Mm-hmm. And other films like that, what those influences were, if there were any. And another question, is this at all a little bit autobiographical or not?
Right. So, Gus Van Sant was the first question. I mean, Gus Van Sant's, like, kind of unavoidable to a certain degree, you know. Seeing his films were the first, this might be a weird way to phrase this, but I think The Elephant was the first movie I decided I hated. And then a month later decided I loved it, and then a week later was like, no, it's terrible. And then I, like, keep going back and forth on that movie. I think it's one of the most beautiful movies, and also is the most painful movie to watch, and really scares me on, like, a profound level. Last Days was important for us. Last Days, we actually all watched the day before we started shooting, because I think what that movie does with pacing and, you know, telling his sort of take on Kurt Cobain's Last Days is pretty incredible. So he's an influence. He's definitely not somebody who I wasn't thinking about him too much when we were making the film, but, you know, watching it, I'm like, yeah, there's a lot of, like, imagery and stuff that's in my head, and maybe I process stories about young people in a certain way because of his films. I think that he does something really incredible, which is he gives all of his characters emotional credibility. No one is patronized, no one's condescended to, everybody exists on their own terms. And I think if there was one thing from his films that, like, I really wanted to try and take, you know, it's that idea of, just because this person's a teenager, just because, you know, this person is a little bit marginalized, that's even more reason to deal with their story with the utmost sincerity and severity also. Definitely not someone we were making the film being like, here's that shot from Elephant, let's do that shot. but definitely someone where it was like, well, why do his movies have such an effect? And it's because of that. It's because the characters exist on their own terms in this really beautiful way. What was the second part?
Autobiographical, maybe?
Oh, autobiographical. Madison, do you want to take this? I mean, so Madison and I have been best friends since we were like 2, and we started making movies together when we were like 6 or 7 yeah. or 8. So we like lived through a lot together.
I don't know if it, I mean, I think all, whatever, writing in general, when you're sitting down to write a script, it's all autobiographical, you know, it's like everything is based on a true story. So, I mean, there are definitely elements of growing up in this town that we grew up in that's a little bit isolated. You know, there were definitely elements of that, that like some of the experiences in the movie were, I would say, almost autobiographical, of like we lived this experience, but it is very universal too. And that's, I think, why it has an impact. It's like specific and non-specific at the same time. So yeah, I wouldn't say that it was autobiographical though, but like...
I said it just a little bit.
Just little bit, yeah, absolutely. but everything, I think, I don't know, at least from a writing perspective, I think.
Yeah. But also was. I think it's a question of like, you know, when you're... sort of your male friendships when you're a teenager are really intense, and you have to sort of figure out like, okay, I know that I love this person, you know, but like, what does that mean? And like this movie takes that question and like heightens it and throws it somewhere else. But like, you know, that's, I think that any guy to some degree, women, I mean, female friendships also pretty intense. But, you know, from, like, my perspective, like, I think that every guy has had a male friendship where it's complicated. Not, I don't mean necessarily sexually or anything, but that there is a certain amount of navigating and figuring out what that means, you know? And I think the birth of sort of the idea of wanting to investigate that comes from the fact that, like, I'm lucky enough to have had the same best friend since I was 2. You know what I mean? And I know how powerful that kind of friendship can be.
Just one last thing. Excuse my ignorance, but this Netflix show, what is the name again? I don't know. Sorry about that.
No.
It's called Stranger Things.
Strangers?
Things.
Strangers in Space.
No, Strangers in Space.
It's called Strangers in Space.
No, it's called Stranger Things.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much, you all. Good luck.
Thank you, guys.
Gracias a todos.
Strangers in Space.